In Wisconsin and across the nation, conflicts are playing out over public lands and who gets to own or manage them. While the issue of land ownership has been around for as long as we've had public lands, calls for privatization seem to be getting louder these days, and in some cases, moves are already being made in Congress.
President Trump opted last year to reduce the size of two national monuments in Utah by 2 million acres, making it the largest declassification of protected land in U.S. history. But our next guest says moves like this are misguided, and in a new book, he lays out the case for preserving, protecting, and supporting public lands.
Stephen Davis joins us now. He's a professor of political science and environmental studies at Edgewood College in Madison. His new book is In Defense of Public Lands, The Case Against Privatization and Transfer. Stephen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Well, are we seeing growing calls? We've always had some controversy, but growing calls in recent years for privatization or federal to state transfers of public lands?
Yeah, since 2010, when the kind of Tea Party movement started and Republicans took over Congress, there has been what you might call a wave of legislation. Now, none of these bills have become law, but quite a few have actually passed the House of Representatives, making it through the process pretty well. In Wisconsin, we've seen a 10,000-acre privatization ordered in the 2013 budget. And that was kind of privatization for privatization's sake. It was an order to the DNR. They had about 4 years to go find 10,000 acres. And they did actually a really good job in finding the least destructive collection of acreage they could round up. But we saw that completed last year. And you also saw the removal of the entire state park budget, the entire state park system from the general budget. So now the state parks have to do what a lot of observers think is ultimately impossible, which is totally to support themselves through revenue.
Now, before we get into your case for keeping public lands public, can you talk about the variety of things that we're talking about when we use a phrase like public lands? It can mean a lot of different things.
So there is about 600 million acres of federal public land, and we're largely, in the book, I'm largely talking about conservation land, so they're not like military bases or Indian reservations. So of that 600 million acres, there's four major categories. There's BLM ranch land, rangeland, I should say, and there's national forests run by the U.S. Forest Service. There's the national park system, which is probably the sort of public land most people are familiar with, but that's only about 12% or so of the federal land. And then there's wildlife refuges, which are about 89 million acres. Then there's about 200 million acres of public land in the 50 states having similar categories of land. And then there's somewhere between 10 and 25 million acres of local city parks, county land, county forests, which are a major thing in Wisconsin.
And you make the case for public lands in a few different ways. Biological or ecological is one, political and economic. Let's take each of them in turn. The ecological and biological benefits of having public lands. Talk about
that. Yeah, so the privatizers make this argument that sort of makes sense on paper, that they like to say nobody washes a rental car, meaning that if you don't own something yourself, you're not going to take care of it. You take care of what you own. And the idea being that because your livelihood depends on the productivity of a piece of land, you're going to take really good care of it. And public land no one really owns, therefore no one really takes care of because no one's accountable. The data shows that that's just not true with public land versus private land if you look at various measures that really matter, which is, for example, biodiversity. So I looked at a bunch of different measures. How fragmented are forests? How much suitable habitat for what we call conservative species, species with really specific needs? Actual discrete populations of imperiled species and endangered species. Acreage of imperiled landscapes, like here in Wisconsin, the oak savanna, or freshwater dunes in Michigan and on the Lake Michigan shore here in Wisconsin. Old growth forests. How much ecological restoration is going on? How much of the land is actually being actively restored? And in every one of those measures I looked at, public land outperforms private land. It's in better shape. It's being managed better on those outcomes related to biodiversity.
And when we talk about federally managed lands, the debate isn't just the federal government runs them or they're sold off for, into private hands. The other option people make the case for is state control, saying, hey, we're here. We can manage this. We know what's going on better than somebody out of Washington, the argument goes.
So if you look at state lands, there's actually two types. Of the 200 million acres of state land, about one quarter, 50 million acres, resembles the federal portfolio of land, you know, state parks, state forests, state wildlife refuges. The other 150 million acres, it's a little complex, but they're called trust lands, and those were kind of granted at statehood when each of the states, especially out west, became states. Wisconsin actually has a little bit of this as well. They were granted sections in a township, two or four sections of land within a 36 section township for use in the public schools. It was to raise money for public schools. So that land from the start was geared towards making money, and it wasn't technically public. Like, you don't go hunting there, you don't go hiking there. That's the model when they say to transfer land to the states. That's the model that's largely upheld. So if, for example, the national parks or national forests of Montana were to be transferred to the state, it would largely be in that resource production model in which the public would not be guaranteed access. It would not be managed necessarily for wildlife or biodiversity, as the state trust lands are not.
Talking to Stephen Davis from Edgewood College. His new book is In Defense of Public Lands, The Case Against Privatization and Transfer. Now let's turn to the economic argument. The privatization argument, as you talk about in your book, is that a private owner is going to be able to make the best use out of land in a better way than public ownership. You try to take a wider look at the economic impact of public land.
So essentially, the privatizer's argument is very, very narrow, and they look at the operational cost. What does it cost to to manage public land, and sometimes to acquire it if that is part of how the land came to be, especially east of the Mississippi? Local governments will often buy public land. And so what are its costs, and what are the revenues that come out of that? Now, that's a curious way to look at it, because we don't apply that to any other government service, or not too many other government services. We don't say that about defense. We don't even say that about libraries. We think that there's something valuable, and we provide for them. So I wanted to widen the lens and look at a lot more than just how much does it cost to run this and how much comes in directly through revenue, like selling timber or charging an entrance fee. And there's some traditional ways to look at that. Multiplier effects, how much does land, the presence of public land or a park, bring to the regional or community, gateway communities around it. And studies show there's about a 2.08 to 2.39 percent multiplier effect, meaning for every dollar you spend, it spins off like another $2. And that's on par with most industries. Return on investment's another way to look at this. And every study done on public land, either acquisition or operations, show a 400 to 1100% return on investment. In other words, for every dollar you spend, you get $4 to $11 back. But the argument that's most interesting to me is one that environmental economists are making much more frequently these days, and that's this notion of ecosystem services. And that's all these spectacularly valuable things that nature, functioning ecosystems, public land provides us that no one ever accounts for. Things like pollination services, carbon sequestration, water retention, water quality. They're considered in the free market models as just free goods, but they are not. They are worth hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars by various accounts. And if you just think of the flooding that we had around Madison, and I promise you it would have been so much worse and so much more damage and expense if we were not ringed by public wetlands around all sides of our city. And those wetlands saved us probably tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars.
And in our last minute or so, the political case, you say there's value in effect to this land is our land when it comes to public lands.
It's the most absolutely democratic institution we have. Everyone owns it. Everyone could access it. And it's incredibly valuable thing that we all own together. And the main complaint of the critics is that it's a messy, conflictual thing to manage this. But that's the nature of democratic governance, and it's nothing to apologize for. They say, you know, it's too chaotic, and if we owned it privately, there'd be no more conflict. And I say that's too high of a price to pay, and democracy is conflict.
And briefly, do you see the pendulum swinging back in favor of public lands?
I really have. The advent of, you know, the Trump years have really shaken people's confidence that this land will be there in the future, and people have really rallied. And with the recent elections, I think, you know, the immediate pressure is off a little bit, and I see a movement growing and a lot of attention being paid now where it wasn't before. People just took it sort of for granted.
Stephen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Stephen Davis is a professor of political science and environmental studies at Edgewood College in Madison. His new book is In Defense of Public Lands, The Case Against Privatization and Transfer.